The following program is underwritten by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. Welcome to Humanities Connection, production of WFDU-FM and the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. I'm Bob Mann. Later on in this episode, you'll hear a segment called Take Pride Bloomfield. My guest will be Holly Belli. But first, a conversation about Cuban voices. Some people saw him as a liberator. Others considered him to be a threat. Well, we know that Fidel Castro turned out to be a dictator who drove many Cubans to find refuge here in the United States. That's what we're going to be talking about on this episode of Humanities Connection, a grant given by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities for something called Cuban Voices. It's a project which is an oral history like so many of the other projects which are done by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities. But in this case, it will chronicle the remarkable stories of Cuban immigrants who came specifically to Elizabeth, New Jersey, in the aftermath of the Cuban Revolution in the 1960s and the 1970s. Here to join me to discuss this in our WFDU TNAC studio is Elliot D. He is the program director for the Snyder Academy in Elizabeth, and Clara Fernandez, who is a member of the Advisory Committee of Cuban American Leaders, working with the Cuban Voices Project. Thank you both for taking the time to come here to WFDU.
Thank you very much, Bob. It's great to be here with you and your audience.
We need to compress the very complex history lesson of Castro's takeover of Cuba to a very short soundbite here, Elliot. But other than what many people know from seeing Godfather 2, which is remarkably accurate, what was the scenario in which Castro seemed to be a liberator for the people but turned out to be, in the end, a communist dictator?
Sure. So I think most Americans are very familiar with the dictatorship of Castro. But what probably a lot of people don't realize is that before the dictatorship of Castro, there was the brutal dictatorship of Batista. He was someone who very much restrained freedoms in Cuba. He was seen as a pawn of American business interests. He was seen as a very corrupt leader. And people were very eager for a change in Cuba. And initially, people in Cuba welcomed Castro as a liberator, including the people who came to the United States in the 1960s and 70s.
Clara, let's talk a little bit about the project funded by the New Jersey Council for the Humanities, Cuban Voices. We've done a lot of programs about oral histories, but they're very important because they're firsthand. They're not written through an academic lens or written by a scholar, but by the people who actually lived it. Talk about this project and who some of the people are who are being interviewed and what we'll get out of this.
Well, I think that the people that are being interviewed, Elliot actually would be better able to give you a more detailed information about that. But I think the project would certainly bring out the fact of the importance of what this immigration, what this population of individuals that come to the United States looking for an opportunity at freedom more than anything else. I've always believed that the Cuban immigration at first was never an economic immigration. It was in a situation of trying to find a place to make your family, a place to be free to think, a place to be able to determine your own life, which you did not have in the island.
And in many cases, Cuban Americans are Americans because of the fact they came as political refugees.
Yes.
This was more than just an economic situation. Some of the Cubans who came already had good lives and prosperity in Cuba and had to flee with what they had on their backs. It was a bit of a different situation. Tell us, since you're one of these people who is profiled here, you know, the Cuban immigrants who came in different waves, you came much later. Tell us about your story and the story of your family, what you experienced when you got here.
Well, we came in 1970, so we were certainly at the end of the bulk of people coming. We were more welcome than most immigrants are today. We did not have this hostilities, this immigrant hostilities. There were some hostilities at the community level, racial here and there, but not what it is here, what it is today. We came at a time my father wanted, I was a child, I was almost 11 years old, and my father needed a place to make sure that he could put his own business. His options were a factory work or a restaurant work, and he had never had that in the island. He had always been a businessman. And he said, no way, I am putting my own business, and this is the place to do it, and here I have the freedom to do a business the way I want to do it. And that's how, you know, my family comes. There was no ESL for the kids, so in school we had to do or die, either you learned the language or you didn't, and so did my parents. So it was a time that, yes, it was difficult to be an immigrant, but it wasn't hostile.
And you were here legally, and of course a lot of people might have seen you as part of the American side of the Cold War, because
yes,
there was that political aspect too. This was a communist versus USA concept in which Cuba was just part of the huge picture of the Cold War.
In that sense, yes. We were part of it's other immigrants actually saw us as actually having more benefits or being more welcome to the country as than they were. Because again, a lot of Cubans came with high levels of education. Some of them actually had money already here and families here, or had been educated in the United States because the bond between the two countries was so close. So it wasn't a foreign country completely for most of the Cubans. There were some ties to the United States. And we were seen as, you know, we were welcomed by the United States. Kennedy welcomed us. Kennedy said publicly, if the Cubans want to come, let them come. And the Cubans took him up on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more of a welcome. It wasn't less difficult because you had to adjust to different culture, different language, different set of everything. But it was not hostile. It definitely was not a hostile.
Elliot, Clara said you could give us more of an overview of the specific stories that you're looking for in these 25 oral histories for Cuban Voices. So fill in some of those gaps there.
Sure.
Who are the people? What are their profiles?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Bob. So we have interviewed 25 people as part of this oral history project, and we wanted the group to be very representative of the Cuban Americans that came to Elizabeth in the 1960s and 1970s. And most of the people that we have interviewed are very regular people. They're very ordinary people. But what's remarkable is the stories they have to share. The stories are really extraordinary. And people have talked about their circumstances in Cuba, the motivations that led them to leave the country, which Clara has already touched on. They've talked about their departure stories, the way that they actually left Cuba, which was very difficult for people.
Were some people literally on boats and rafts and just fighting for their lives?
So in the first wave of immigration, people really came on airplanes. Many of them came first to Miami and then came to Elizabeth. Some came directly to the New York area. They had family or other ties in Elizabeth, and then they settled in Elizabeth. But in this first wave, immigrants mostly came by air. Which was obviously a different experience than when people came by boat. But that was still a very fraught experience. First of all, because of the political ideology of the Castro government, if you left Cuba, you were considered to be a traitor, and your family would face serious discrimination as a consequence. There were concerns, for example, that young men, would be conscripted in the army. So many families wanted their boys, when they became of military service age, to be able to leave the country. So they would actually make arrangements for them to leave. And then the families would very quietly make arrangements to leave the country, because if they were found to be disloyal to the regime, wanting to leave the country, they would face active discrimination in many ways.
And then, of course, we have all of the stories that we're more familiar with in later waves. 1980, I believe, was the Cuban boat people.
Yes.
There's the story in the late 1990s of El Duque, Orlando Hernandez, the great pitcher of the New York Yankees, literally coming over here
right
on a raft, and all of these stories that go on and on way beyond Castro's takeover in 1959.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get too far into the interview, Clara, you come to the United States, there's 50 states that go from Maine to Hawaii. Why, of all the places in these 50 United States, is there a large community centered in Elizabeth, New Jersey?
Well, it's the large community is no longer there. They have all retired and gone to Florida or elsewhere south.
But so they got the gist of this themselves. They, you know, they're someplace else. Later. Yeah.
But when we came in 1970, the funny thing was that I'm from a very small town called Bayamo, and apparently somebody from there was here already. And in a small town where everybody knows each other, it was, hey, John Doe is in this place called Elizabeth. Oh, okay, so I'll go there too. But the opportunities were better. There was a lot of manufacturing. There was a lot of jobs other than the tourist and the restaurant serving jobs that Miami offered. The climate was brutal. You know, you take tropical people into sub-zero degrees weather. That has never been a highlight of our stay here. But the opportunities for jobs, the joke in my house was you could leave one factory and go to the other. You could leave one place and go to the other and not even have to move your car. The opportunity for working was there. The opportunity for setting up your own business was a lot friendlier up north than it was in Miami. A lot of people came with the idea that, hey, I had a business in the island. I want to put a business here. It was easier for some reason. It was more welcoming. The community was more welcoming. And I guess the fact that everybody knew each other from back of the island, it just created a support group. I mean, there were families that... like the Salerno families that were known for, if their families were coming, they would already have a business set up for whoever was coming next. So it just created a chain reaction.
It was an economic community as well as a community of friendship and common heritage. We only have 3 minutes left, so I want to get to a lot of other business here quickly. Elliot, I introduced you as the program director of the Snyder Academy. The grant actually was received by the old First Historic Trust. Mm-hmm. Just quickly tell the audience what the connections of these two institutions are to the New Jersey Council for the Humanities and Cuban Voices.
Sure. So the old First Historic Trust is a nonprofit organization that manages and maintains the property of the First Presbyterian Church in Elizabeth, which is a very historic church and property. It dates back to 1664. It's literally the place where New Jersey was founded at that period of time. And the Snyder Academy is the old parish house for the church, which has now been converted into a community and cultural center. We offer many different programs to serve the people of Elizabeth and New Jersey, some of which are history-based programs because of the historic significance of our site. We actually have begun to introduce a number of more contemporary history programs for the community, and Cuban Voices is one of those.
And just to wrap things up, we're initially broadcasting this in April of 2018, but the show is going to go on njhumanities.org as an archive in perpetuity. It could get repeated here on WFDU. So what's the long-term gain by getting these oral histories done and having these Cuban voices preserved?
So the stories that these 25 people have to share with us are really remarkable in so many ways. Certainly, they shed light on the experience of Cuban Americans who came to Elizabeth in the 1950s and 1960s. But really, the themes that are revealed in these recordings transcend that experience. They really talk about some amazing universal human themes. Themes of family, community, trying to make a life for yourself. And when people have a chance to listen to these recordings and experience the workshop that will be created from those recordings, they will, I think, get tremendous insight about what it means to be an immigrant and what it means to be an American. And
whether that be from Ireland, Africa, Latin America, anywhere.
Exactly.
A common experience of an immigrant coming to America to find meaning in a new life.
Exactly.
I've got to give you the last word, but we only have 30 seconds. What does this mean to you, Clara, considering your family, your personal history?
Well, it's an opportunity, as Elliot just said, to ascertain the fact that being an immigrant here, this is an opportunity. This is a land of opportunity, regardless of how difficult it gets. And I think immigrants are very aware that there's a lot of block and there's a lot of roadblocks, but you're coming from nothing and the country still offers you many things, and it still does. And it doesn't matter which point in the world you come to. It is an opportunity to show people, hey, it is hard, it's not easy, but it can be done. And the United States does offer you that opportunity.
That's a beautiful way to end the segment. I thank you both, Elliot Dee, who's Program Director of the Snyder Academy, and Clara Fernandez, who's one of the members of the Advisory Committee, for a very special project called Cuban Voices.